welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. Kathy Groover, is host of the national TV show, The Alternative Medicine Cabinet. She has earned her doctorate as a traditional naturopathic physician and PhD in natural health. Kathy was featured on Lifetime Television's The Balancing Act in 2011, speaking about natural health. She has studied mind-body medicine at the famed Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine at Harvard Medical School and pursued further education at the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Groover has been featured as an expert in countless publications and has written dozens of health and wellness articles. Some publications include Massage Magazine, Discovery, First for Women, Thermoscope Magazine, and Pacific Coast Business Times. She has appeared as a guest expert on over 65 radio shows and has covered topics such as back pain, mind-body medicine, healthy pregnancy, homeopathics, nutrition, and patient advocacy. She has also presented over 50 educational lectures around the country and has served as an expert witness for massage negligence and ethics cases. A recent winner of NALBOT's Spirit of Entrepreneurship Awards, Kathy maintains a massage and natural health practice in Santa Barbara, California, also offering phone and email health consultations. She has also produced an instructional massage DVD, Therapeutic Massage at Home, Learn to Rub People the Right Way, and is a practitioner with over 20 years of experience. Her book, The Alternative Medicine Cabinet, was selected as a finalist for the Indy Excellence Award and was recently turned into a national talk show. For more information and free health tips and resources, go to www.thealternativemedicinecabinet.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Kathy, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say about nutrition. Now, first, many people believe that the food we eat is safe, and you say that it's not always the case. How do we know who to trust?
Yeah, it's really, really difficult because we assume that, you know, things we see advertised on TV and that things that are available in our store have been vetted, that they're safe, that we have these organizations like the FDA to protect us from things. And in reality, they oftentimes are looking out for their own best interests. And one of the big issues right now is the high fructose corn syrup. And, you know, there's quote research going back and forth, and there's commercials saying it's good for you, there's commercials saying it's bad for you. It is really hard to distinguish through all that information and see who to believe. My advice on that is follow the money. If it's going to benefit them by keeping it in the food supply, you know, if they're making billions of dollars from it, you have to start to question their research and wonder if it's truly safe. And I have seen, you know, commercials and ads and these trends of, you know, things are healthy, things are not healthy. Oh, butter's bad, go to margarine. Oh, margarine's bad, go to butter. It's extraordinarily confusing. And the easiest thing is follow the money. See who's making the profit from that research, and that'll start to give you an idea of, is this really good for us? Should this be on our table?
Imagine if it's confusing to you, who has a professional background, what it is to the consumer or the layperson who has no background in nutrition. You know, it must be really confusing for them.
Absolutely. And you see the commercials and you assume that they're true. And so oftentimes it's not. And I think that's really unfair. I think we need to have better truth in advertising and better truth in labeling with some of the products that we're getting, because I see this as being one of the huge contributing factors to obesity, to, I think, some of the ADD in our society and these, you know, behavioral issues with kids. Parents and consumers don't know what they're truly getting in their food, and I think that's incredibly unfair. We need to have a little more clarity into what we're actually putting into our bodies. It's the only fair thing for us.
And one is the genetically modified foods, because people have been fighting to try to get labeling for this, and I see this all the time on Facebook, but No one seems to pay any attention because, as you say, follow the money. People are making money from this.
The GMO thing is really hard because there's states around the nation now that are trying to pass bills that would require labeling of genetically modified foods. And a couple months back, I think it was Connecticut, it was somewhere in the New England area, they actually passed the bill.
It
was going to be required. Mm-hmm. And within moments, they got a phone call from the head of Monsanto who said, if you pass this bill, we are suing your state.
Mm.
And the governor didn't sign it. So it's like it's going to take not only the consumer saying we want this, but also someone in the government, someone who is legislating this stuff, to have the guts to say, yeah, okay, sue me. You know, what kind of society are we living in when someone's so afraid of losing profit that they can sue an entire state for passing a law that simply tells us what's in our food?
Right.
I mean, that was just appalling to me. And you know, I'm here in California, and we same thing. We have on the ballot that, you know, we want to have genetically modified food labeled. A lot of people don't understand the concept of GMO. They don't know what that means. They think, oh, it's crossbreeding just like we've done with green beans and tomatoes for the last however many decades. It's completely different. It's a very chemicalized process. And we ultimately don't know what it's going to do to our bodies.
Right.
We've seen it linked to increase in allergies, maybe obesity and depression. And, you know, we don't know what it's going to do. But we should have the right to know if it's in our food if we want to know.
Right. I agree. Right. Then, Kathy, what is MSG and how pervasive is it in our food supply?
MSG is monosodium glutamate. And we typically would hear about that in years past as, oh, you know, that's the Chinese food syndrome. There are a lot of people that would get headaches, they would get hot, they would have these neurological symptoms after they would have Chinese food. It was really, really heavily used for some reason in that culture's diet. We've had MSG since World War II. We saw the Japanese using it. We thought it was a good idea. It's a, quote, flavor enhancer. So basically what it does is it makes crappy quality food taste good. We want more of it. It zings our tongue. It makes us want to eat more of that food. And it used to be when they manufactured MSG, it was a natural process. There was a bacteria that would create this MSG. We would use it and put it in the food supply. That was bad enough. But now they've found that they can make it faster, cheaper, and easier by using a genetically modified bacteria. So the MSG is not only bad for us, it's also, as we just talked about, genetically modified. And it is in so many packaged products. And here's the really creepy thing, Carl. It doesn't have to be labeled. So you can look at the food label, not see MSG, and it still might contain a real huge amount of MSG. It has to be labeled only if it's 99.9% pure. If you pick up a package and see MSG, you know it's a heck of a lot of MSG. I used to be a big fan of Doritos. Loved the cheesy Doritos. That was my go-to snack. And I realized that like the second or third ingredient is MSG. And that tingly feeling on the lips, that burning on the tongue, that's the MSG doing that. And I discovered after a very unfortunate incident at a Christmas dinner with too much creamed corn that had MSG in it, I got incredibly ill. A lot of people have really bizarre symptoms that can be linked directly to MSG. Headaches, asthma, migraines, sleeplessness, anxiety, shaking, eye twitching. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. And again, it doesn't have to be labeled. We're starting to catch on to this, though. We're starting to ask for no MSG. And I was so excited last Christmas to see one of the soup manufacturers, because, you know, they're advertising chicken broth and stuff for the Christmas cooking, advertise their soup with a big, you know, big letters on it that said no MSG. And when I start to see things like that being advertised, it really excites me because it means the food manufacturers are catching on and they're going to start telling us they're making safer and better food for us.
That's great. Good. Kathy, you mentioned the high fructose corn syrup and the controversy around that. What is the true story about this additive?
This goes way deep into the government, and you wouldn't think that something as simple as high fructose corn syrup would be a government problem. But one of the largest subsidized crops in this country, here in America, is corn. And the majority of that corn is genetically modified. So it's not the good corn you're going to go to the farmer's market and get and eat at the summer barbecue. This is very, you know, high density, huge amounts of crops that have been genetically modified specifically for food for cattle, and high fructose corn syrup and corn solids that are used, again, in our processed food. So when we started subsidizing so much corn, we thought, well, what can we do with this corn? So they found that high fructose corn syrup was a really sweet, really cheap substitute for sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have to say, I'm sure the food companies didn't go into this saying, hey, you know what, let's put this in the food to make everybody fat and, you know, diabetic. It was purely financial. So much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Now we started to realize there is a clear connection between obesity, and there's a couple charts you can, if you Google it online, you can find that show the rate of high fructose corn syrup consumption absolutely mirrors the rate of obesity and diabetes in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It is pervasive, and you know they're trying to change the name to corn sugar, and the sugar manufacturers are fighting that. The FDA actually upheld that they could not call it corn sugar, and the commercials are so misleading, and I find them incredibly offensive because the mother that questions, oh, haven't you heard about high fructose corn syrup, the mother that's pro-high fructose corn syrup basically just is out to make her look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're you know degrading the parents in this country that want to question what their kids are eating, and I think we have to ask more questions. There was a study done back in, I think it was 2008 or 2009 at Princeton, where they did very specific studies with sugar, high fat, and high fructose corn syrup. And the rats that they gave high fructose corn syrup put on so much more weight,
mm-hmm.
so much more belly fat. There are clear studies that show it's not good for us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say their studies are right, that it's the same as sugar. It's still genetically modified. It looks like about 40% of the high fructose corn syrup contains high amounts of mercury from processing. So it's just bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I have to applaud a manufacturer because the other day I was watching the Olympics and Welch's grape jelly commercial came on. And at the end, the owner, who has been in the family forever, smiled and said, no high fructose corn syrup. I actually wrote to Welch's. I'm probably going to get a case of jelly that I'm never going to eat. But I actually wrote to Welch's and said, I'm a natural health practitioner. Thank you for listening to what the public wants and taking that out of your product.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. So we have to be activists sometimes too, right?
We do. And I did a panel discussion about Monsanto and the whole genetically modified thing. And I said, you know, there, it's one thing. You know, we cast our vote every time we swipe the scanner code with the
mm-hmm.
products that we buy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're telling everybody what we want. But another way to do that is don't invest in those companies.
Right.
And I do a lot of investing with stocks and mutual funds. And I sat down my financial advisor and I said, look, I know these mutual funds and these ETFs contain a lot of companies. I will occasionally review them. And if I found that you bought me something that contains Monsanto stock, I will not only dump the stock, I will dump you. This means a lot to me. I
Good.
Do not want to put my money into that company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way you can have your voice be heard, is to mm-hmm. not give them any money.
That's great. Good. Then, Kathy, some of us don't consume sugar. I'm one.
Right.
And but what about the artificial sweeteners that we use in place of sugar?
Yeah, and this is a hard one because I do have clients and family members who are diabetic, and they're told don't eat sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talked about high fructose corn syrup, so that's not a good substitution either. So we turn to things like Splenda and Equal and Sweet and Low. You know, we've got the pink packet, the blue packet, the yellow
mm-hmm.
packet. For some reason, they've decided colors are the best way to figure this all out. None of those are good for us.
Yeah.
And I've had so many people who I see them put, you know, 3 or 4 packets in their iced tea, and then they get a refill of iced tea a couple minutes later, and then they put 3 or 4 packets
mm-hmm.
in. Those were approved basically at 1 packet a day as being
mm-hmm.
considered safe. So if you're pouring 3 or 4 in and you're having 5 or 6 glasses of tea a day, or if you're living off diet soda, which is incredibly bad for us, there's no good reason to be drinking soda instead of water, instead of a healthier beverage.
Mm-hmm.
These can lead to really serious problems. Splenda is not, I mean, it's a derivative of sugar, but it's been chemicalized so that it has other things in it, including, I believe, formaldehyde.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe that's the one that has chlorine.
Mm-hmm.
Either way,
mm-hmm.
formaldehyde, chlorine, one, Equal has one and Splenda has one.
Mm-hmm.
If you absolutely have to use a sweetener
mm-hmm.
and you really want to use an artificial one, if you're at a restaurant and you're desperate, I have to say the pink is probably the safest. It's
mm-hmm.
saccharin. It's been around since the 50s. It's probably been the most tested. I recommend cutting them all out and using something like stevia
mm-hmm.
or lohan or agave nectar. I'm an iced tea drinker, and stevia is my go-to sweetener. It's
mm-hmm.
a natural plant. It hasn't been horribly processed and made into this what could be a dangerous chemical. And in 1988, the most complaints to the FDA were about Equal, but yet it's still on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in everything. And again, that was linked to the government. When Rumsfeld got put into the White House, suddenly it was approved as safe. it was denied up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, we can trace things further back than just the food industry. It goes way high. And I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but this is how this stuff happens. I mean, this is how, you know, milk got so popular. Nixon had stuff to do with that. And I mean, it's amazing how when we trace the stuff back, we see it's not only profit, but also politics.
Mm-hmm. Right. I use the stevia, and when I can find them, I pick up the plant. And the leaves are so sweet. The leaves are sweeter, really, than the stevia that you get. And then I kind of dry the leaves, and then I kind of take my fingers and I squash them up, and I put that in my tea and all. And it works great. And I like it because it is natural.
Right, right. I actually tried to grow stevia last year. I have a little garden here. Mm-hmm. And these plants get huge. I had no idea that thing was like 5 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And I dried them, and I tried to make a tincture out of it with alcohol. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, it was the worst tasting thing. It smelled great. And then I would drip it in my tea, and it was just disgusting. So I ruined like 3 stevia plants. And I had a volunteer this year, so maybe I'll just try drying it and sprinkling it in. I didn't think to not try to process it somehow.
Yeah. That worked for me, so I'll try that. Yeah. Then, Kathy, there are trans fats, and can you tell us about those and how we know if we're eating them or not?
Yeah, trans fats are the bad fats. And this is also where things get confusing for the consumer, because we hear things like essential fatty acids, omega-3 fats, omega-6 fats, trans fats. And I was teaching a nutrition class, and I was telling my students about how important education is. And I said, how many people in this country do you think know what trans fats are? And, of course, because they were in a learning environment, they assumed, well, of course, we know this, so everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I need to ask an average American. So I called my father, because he's kind of an average American, owns a paint store in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't there, but his coworker was. And I said, hey, John, I have a question for you. He said, okay. I said, do you know what trans fats are? And he goes, oh, yeah, those are the bad – no, wait a minute. No, those are the good ones. No? Those are the – but those are the ones you want to, I don't know, who the hell knows this stuff? And it was so true. And just having that conversation with him, I think, was so true. We don't know. It gets so confusing. So trans fats are bad. We want to avoid trans fats. And now we're starting to see all this packaging that says no trans fats. And what's kind of funny with that is these are things that wouldn't have had trans fats in them anyway. I mean, it's practically like putting, you know, on a bottle of spring water, no trans fats.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Trans fats are formed when we hydrogenize or partially hydrogenize oils. So what that does is that takes a liquid oil, it bubbles hydrogen into it, and it makes it solid. This is how we got margarine, which is basically just one big tub of trans fat. Now, the tricky thing with the labeling here, and again, they can skirt some of these issues like with the MSG, even if it says no trans fats on it, it could still have trans fats in it. So turn over the jar, the bottle, the can, and if there's anything in there that says hydrogenized, hydrolyzed, partially hydrogenated, that means there's trans fats in it. And they can get away with that because there's some sort of limit. If it's less than a certain percent, they don't have to label it. So it takes some detective work on your part. So anything that's hydrogenated, you want to stay away from. Margarine, honestly, is one of the worst things we could be putting in our body. I totally get why we switched to that however many years ago, because we thought butter was so bad and all these men were having these high blood pressure issues. But, you know, in this day and age, we don't need margarine. It's bad for us. Butter's okay. Have a little bit of butter. It's good for us. It contains things we actually need. So, yeah, avoid the trans fats. Go with the good fats, olive oils and avocado and sesame oil and things like that.
Now, I think the margarine came about in the Second World War, because I remember when, as a child, there was no butter, and we'd get the stuff that looked like lard, and it came with a red packet, and you mixed the red into the lard, and it became margarine. And so I think it came about as a result of food shortages or, you know, shortages during the Second World War.
That totally could be. All I remember was, you know, I'm a kid of the 70s and 80s, and I remember having to switch to margarine because my dad had high blood pressure. And the doctor put him on this, you know, no salt, no butter, try to cut out animal fats, blah, blah, blah. So we constantly had this tub of really creepy margarine in our kitchen. So that's where I remember it becoming popular. But, yeah, I could totally see it coming out of the war and not, you know, not having butter.
Right. This would have been in the early 40s. Right. Yeah. Then, Kathy, is there anything else you'd like to say before we look at your book and services and products?
Yeah, I just want, I want people to do the research and look into it. It's, you know, we don't have to be a slave to the commercials or what our doctor says or what we see on TV. We have the ability to make better choices. And like I said before, with every swipe of the barcode on products, we're telling people what we want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so exciting for me to see these companies that are starting to get rid of some of this bad stuff, because the buck speaks. The dollar is what's going to influence
right.
this all.
Right.
So if we stand up and say, we don't want this stuff in our food, it could be slow, but there's going to be a change.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that exciting. We have the power to make changes in our food.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, then, Kathy, would you tell us about your book and your services and products and how the listeners can reach you?
Oh, absolutely. My first book is called The Alternative Medicine Cabinet, and it's a collection of natural health tips. It starts out with really basic things like what are different types of massage, what is Reiki, what are homeopathics, and how you can incorporate those into your life. And then it gets into real specific things like obesity and depression, high blood pressure, cancer, stress, women in stress, business things, how to avoid cold and flu. So I wanted to give people a really
mm-hmm.
easy read. It's a short book. It's about 140 pages. And one of my friends calls it the perfect bathroom book because it's divided into little chapters. So no matter where you pick it up, you get a little pearl of wisdom. I have a massage DVD that teaches you how to do massage at home. I'm a massage therapist with 22 years experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put that all into a DVD to teach people to do that at home. And all that stuff's available at my website, which is thealternativemedicinecabinet.com. You can sign up for my newsletter. My TV series should be airing in September. I'm hosting my own natural health show on OTV, which will be airing nationally. So you can learn about all these things and more. And I just want to educate. I want people to know they have other choices. So you can find all that again on my site, which is thealternativemedicinecabinet.com.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Kathy. It's been interesting, and I know it will be informative for the listeners, and I hope that they will pay more attention to what they're buying in the markets, and I'm sure they will. So I thank you very much.
I'm sure they will, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Appreciate it.
After reading about, watching, and listening to Anne Margaret, Linda Gray, and others in the last issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com, I thought that issue could not be matched. But this one is another prize winner you will not want to miss. One of the highlights for me was listening to and reading about Willie Nelson and his long career as a singer, songwriter, author, poet, actor, and activist, and still going strong at age 79. Listening to him brought back memories of my deceased older brother, who was partial to Willie Nelson's music. Two other celebrities interviewed, Marilou Henner and Abigail Klein. Also memorable was listening to Billy Vera sing songs from the Golden Age and read about his life in film, radio, and TV, as well as listening to Charlie Langer play jazz on the saxophone. That brought back fond memories of my early adulthood in New York City, where I haunted the jazz clubs. On a more serious note, articles and videos were included on issues such as raids on raw milk and cheese farmers and people using these products, the biggest toxic waste cover-up in U.S. history and the Gulf Coast, the sex trade business, genetically modified foods, and the forbidden cures of cancer. These issues affect us all, and knowing about them is a first step toward advocating to assist in eliminating these injustices and dangers. Heartwarming stories and interviews are also included. One is about Salva Dutt, one of the lost boys who escaped from his village during the Sudanese Civil War and faced many hardships before arriving in the United States and becoming a citizen. He has since formed a charitable organization to drill wells so that the Sudanese people have clean water to drink. We are also introduced to Alex Mund, who works with displaced people, and we can read a letter from an 11-year-old environmentalist. I hope this brief overview will give you an idea of what's in store for you in the current issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com. My second guest, Michael Brill, has a Master's of Education and has been a numerologist since 1985. He has over 31 years of combined experiences as an educator and trainer in the public and private schools, colleges, business, and government. This includes 10 years' experience in the aerospace industry, together with 2 years at NASA. Michael has written 3 books, developed a cosmic numerology card deck, and Manifest Game. He has appeared on Fox and public television and over 450 radio programs in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the Cayman Islands since 1985. Michael has developed and practiced a theory that melds the science of numerology and quantum physics with the concepts of reincarnation and gematria. He calls it cosmic numerology and quantum numbers. His books include Cosmic Numerology, Know Your Numbers, Know Yourself, Discovering the Solution to Your Life Challenges, Identify Anyone's Behavioral Patterns in Less Than a Minute, and Numerology for Healing by Destiny Books. More information is available at www.awakener.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Michael, and I'm anxious to hear about cosmic numerology. Now, first, what is cosmic numerology?
Good question. Cosmic numerology, the word cosmic deals with the cosmos and the universe. Everything in the universe vibrates. If something vibrates, it can be measured. If you measure it, you either use letters or numbers to identify it. Numerology, as developed by the Greek Pythagoras in the West, deals with letters and numbers and the patterns and interrelationships they form.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece is quantum mechanics, which is all about potential. All the dark matter that science is trying to figure out its purpose, it's all potential. And like little particles of dust, when there is an attraction, the particles come together and form something solid. That's creation.
Mm-hmm.
The third piece is gematria. This is an ancient Kabbalistic art where they would take words and translate them into the Hebrew language and then use Hebrew numerology to answer it. I do this with the English language. An illness or a disease or a dream, I turn into a string of numbers and then interpret the psychological and emotional characteristics that are involved.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth piece is reincarnation. And that in between lifetimes, we do a review with spirit. Now, as we do this review in God, imagine the yin-yang symbol. Half of us are celestial, half of us is earthly. And then we consciously choose the letters of our name and the numbers of our birthday.
Mm-hmm.
The first name is how we behave at work. The middle name is how we behave in relationships. No middle name says you've come to learn to deal with your emotions,
mm-hmm.
from being very intense to very flat. The last name is the family dynamic that you chose to experience and be born into. If you're adopted, then the birth family owed you or you owed them, and as a result, the debt was canceled and you moved on to the family you're supposed to be with,
mm-hmm.
although we consider that to be an abandonment issue.
Mm-hmm.
Once we completed picking the name, picking the birthday, making sure we have enough grace to be successful in this lifetime, and we come down. Now, as we touch that veil that separates the celestial and earthly realms, it's much like sticking a finger in a light socket, and the celestial self is shocked by the energy change. The frequency
mm-hmm.
is different. And so they're not separated, the ego and the soul, and ego stands for easing God out.
Mm-hmm.
And once the ego starts moving closer into this earth realm, it awakens and has awareness, not consciousness. And it looks around. Why is it dark? Why am I alone? Where is everybody? Am I being punished? Have I been betrayed? Doesn't anybody love me? Am I the only one? Or I've been abandoned. And just before the ego and the celestial self reconcile, we're born, like a nanosecond.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing they do is cut the umbilical cord, at which point the ego says, hold it right there, buckos, we're not doing this again. Nope. And so humans pick up two basic behavior patterns universally
mm-hmm.
on a spectrum. At one end of the spectrum is control, doing for or not doing for others, but not allowing anybody to do for you. And the other end of the spectrum is codependency. We slide back and forth like water in a tube between these two points. The only way we can break this pattern of reactive patterns, reactive behavior based on abandonment issues, is to make conscious choices instead of reactive choices.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that come into our life or on our payroll, we actually hire them to push our buttons
mm-hmm.
so that we can learn the lesson and start to do what we love instead of to be loved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Staying at a job you don't like because you're making money or you're afraid nobody will hire you or you think you're too old, it just exacerbates the negative energy and brings an illness or disease into your life.
Mm-hmm.
One of my books, Numerology for Healing, talks about the relationship between your behavior and the illness or disease that you've contracted. And the other book, Decoding Behavior with Numerology, talks about how easy it is to identify people's basic behavior patterns using a first vowel, first consonant, and a name, and a month and day of birth.
Mm-hmm.
Numerology itself, cosmic numerology, it's hard to just pinpoint something specific. It can do everything. If somebody gives me three single-digit numbers, like 123 or 591, I can tell them what's going on in their life and the positive aspect they need to do to follow it. Because for every challenge we presented to ourselves in this lifetime, we've already provided a solution to it, a soul-lution, solutions chosen by the soul that guarantee success. But it's the abandonment issue that keeps us locked in the reactive behaviors instead of making the choice and moving forward. A lot of people are on a spiritual path. I believe there's the same price you pay every time you want to move up a notch, and that is you have to be prepared to let go of what you love the most. Much like Abraham had to let go of his son, he waited 900 years for this son. And then God says, I want him. He says, okay. And then he didn't have to give it up, but he was ready to. So cosmic numerology is, in its easiest thing, it does a personality profile. Who are you? Why are you here? What works? What doesn't? What do you need to do to make things work?
Mm-hmm.
What's your life calling? What's your karma? What are the big challenges you need to deal with, and how can you resolve it? It provides answers, not just statements.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm. Then how does this help someone to fulfill their life calling and destiny?
Well, you determine what your life calling was before you came down. The way I identify it is to add the total of your name numerically to the total of your month, day, and year of birth. And that's the passion. That's what you wanted to be when you were a little kid. A dancer, a doctor, a brain surgeon. I wanted to be a brain surgeon
mm-hmm.
when I was like 7 years old. I was terrible with math.
mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet today I am a brain surgeon using numerology to get into people's brains and talk to them about their patterns and how they can best change it to increase the quality of their life.
Mm-hmm. Then how does using the middle name describe the emotional behavior patterns?
Well, I'll use my name as an example. My middle name is Richard. Richard comes out to be a number 7. So with a name of Richard as a 7, it was hard for me when I was growing up to be able to emotionally connect with people. I had abandonment issues. I had
mm-hmm.
anxieties. I didn't trust people. I would hold the water fountain handle for everybody to drink, but I wouldn't let anybody hold it for me because I was afraid they would let it go and everybody would laugh because I was sucking air.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy to be the giver, but difficult to be a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
As a number 7.
Mm-hmm.
If your middle name comes out to be an 8, you don't have a really strong sex drive, but when it's there, it's there. When you're ready, you're ready. If you're not, don't bother me. Leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
A number 2, a number 6, they could be codependent in the negative sense, or they could be very compassionate in a positive sense.
Mm-hmm.
So each number describes an aspect of our emotional self. Now, in making a very big, gross generalization and applying it to cultures, and I say this is a generalization, it's not a fact. The generalization is, with no middle name, you're either too flat or too intense, out of balance. And so if we go to Latino culture, with no middle name, that's very intense. If we go to Asian cultures, and I just spent 6 months over in Thailand, they're very flat. They don't express the true emotion. They may smile or say something pleasant, but they're not really going to reveal what they feel inside because they don't want to lose face and they don't want people to think they don't have it together. So that's the importance of the middle name.
Right. Then how does our first, middle, and last name influence daily interactions with others?
The total for your first, middle, and last name is called your expression. This is the way you present yourself to the world. It's how the world sees you. Sometimes it's like being at a carnival where they have a cutout and you just stick your face in there. All the world sees is the surface, but not the real person. The consonants in your total name is your personality, your ego, your feelings, your emotions, your impulses. And the vowels of your whole name represent your soul's urge, contract you sign with God or the universe as to the direction you want to go in. Your month, day, and year of birth is your destiny. It's what you're destined to accomplish. And then the total of your birthday and the total of your name becomes your life calling. So there's all these repetitive patterns. There's only nine numbers, and I use double-digit numbers. So, for example, the vowels in Michael come out to be 15. One and five make six. So I look at the one, I look at the five, I look at the six, because the one and five are the energies that make the six, which are different than a 24-6 or a 33-6 or a 42-6. And so the double-digit number and the single-digit number give me a very, very clear picture. And as I do a chart or an analysis for someone, they get a copy of the chart, and the challenge numbers are color-coded so that just glancing at the chart, you can see where your repetitive patterns are and what the solutions are. And many times, our solutions are actually challenges. And so we get a chance to do the old two birds with one stone trick. If you have a solution that's actually a challenge and solve it, you get rid of the challenge and you strengthen the solution.
Now tell us about the name Barack, our president.
B-A. I'm just going to start with the first vowel and first consonant, B-A. That makes him a three, one. B is the second letter of the alphabet. A is the first letter. So two and one make three, and two minus one is one. I'm sorry. Yeah, 3-1. So in order for him to feel confident, the three says he needs to keep coming up with new ideas. He needs to receive recognition for his visions and bring things forward. When we look at Ron, as in Ron Santorum, we have a 6-3. This is somebody that can get a little pissy at people that don't listen to what he tells them. If you're looking at Newt, it's a 6-4. If he's in charge, we're going to do it his way, or there's the door and don't bother coming back. If we're looking at Mitt, it's a 5-4. He doesn't like change unless he's making it, and if he makes it, it can't come fast enough. This is just thumbnail sketches using the first vowel and first consonant. I don't have my papers with me, but I've done the charts on all of them, and we just have to pick the best one we can at this point and hope that the welfare of the people takes precedence over the welfare of businesses.
Right. Now, Michael, would you tell us then about your two books and services and how the listeners can reach you?
Yes. I have three books. The first book I self-publish. You have to order it from me. You can get it through my website, which is awakener.com, A-W-A-K-E-N-E-R.com. There's also some terrific articles there, especially the one on abandonment issues. My email address is michael@awakener.com, And if any of the listeners want to send me an email, I will send them a copy of an article about what 2012 has in store for them.
Mm-hmm.
My phone number is 561-866-5479. That's 561-866-5479. The first book is Know Your Numbers, Know Yourself. That's my textbook, which explains my entire system. The second book is Numerology for Healing, which takes 200 illnesses and diseases, turns it into a string of numbers, and explains the emotional and psychological behavior patterns that have brought this into your life.
Mm-hmm.
The third book, very easy. You don't need any experience with numerology at all. You can take it off the shelf in the bookstore and start using it immediately. It teaches you how to add the month and day of birth, called the achievement number, and determine someone's core issue, and then take the first vowel or consonant combination, as in Mitt or Barack, and find out in a thumbnail the person's basic behavior patterns.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good. The second book I would highly recommend to salespeople, school teachers, mental health workers, parents, even grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And all you need to do is be able to add 3 plus 1 or 5 minus 3. Very simple. Turn to the back of the book, and all predefined names and definitions are there for you already.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to do a little bit of math, and then the answers are already provided for you.
Right. Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Michael. I will have you back at a later time, because I know you have a lot of information to share.
Thank you. Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael. My last guest, Linda Watson, is the cook and researcher who started Cook for Good in the summer of 2007. Her background is project manager and procedures writing, helped her write and test recipes and optimize the shopping list and cooking plans. Her book, Wildly Affordable, Organic, Eat Fabulous Foods, Get Healthy, and Save the Planet, all on $5 a day or less, was published by DeCoppa Press in June 2011. She writes about healthy, affordable eating for the Huffington Post, and her column, Veg of the Week, lives on the homepage of the online magazine Good Veg. She also writes as a feature expert for the Organic Trade Association on EcoBonus and as a feature blogger on drgreen.com. Linda teaches classes at a wide range of venues, from the Share Our Strengths National Conference of Leaders to SAS Institute, from Whole Food to food banks, from slow food groups and co-ops to colleges, clinics, and businesses. She gives cooking demonstrations at farmers market and speaks to groups who are interested in cooking great food, controlling expenses, lose weight, raising healthy children, fighting hunger, or reducing their impact on the planet. More information is available at www.cookforgood.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Linda, and I look forward to hearing how those with lower incomes can use organic food if they so desire. Now, first, in your book, Wildly Affordable Organic, you say you got started on this project partly in response to the food stamp challenge. What did you learn, and what was it like?
Thank you, Carl. It's a pleasure to be here. I just loved being on that food stamp challenge. That was a project that was started about 9 years ago by some anti-hunger activists.
Mm-hmm.
They rightly said, the food stamp allowance has not been raised in our country in 9 years, and we need to get some attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked all sorts of public leaders, civic groups, churches, to try living on the average amount. That's a dollar a meal per person for 1 week,
mm-hmm.
just to see how hard it could be. And I was following the news about this, and I realized, you know, there's a lot of people who are very much struggling on this challenge, but they're saying things that don't make sense. They're saying you can't buy milk, you can't buy fruit, you can't buy vegetables. I thought, it's legal tender. You should be able to do that. These
mm-hmm.
people have never worked on a budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that I had something to contribute there
mm-hmm.
and did the plan myself, learning that if you will just eat low on the food chain, not waste anything, and eat with the seasons, that you can afford to eat delicious, even organic food on $5 a day per person or less.
Well, I agree with many people that say that organic food is too expensive, that it's really a luxury for the rich. And you say that you have 5 top tips for making organic food affordable.
Yes, yes, and it is very affordable. I mean, if you look at that $5 a day in North Carolina, the food stamp allowance is around $5.50.
Mm-hmm.
So even eating organic, I'm below the food stamp allowance here. So what do I do? Number one, don't waste anything. You'll get started thinking about this. Next time you pick up a lemon and you need to juice that lemon for something, think, you know, sometimes I use the lemon zest. Why don't I zest the lemon, put a little bit of lemon juice on that, and freeze it for when I need that zest? Then you're getting double use out of your lemon. Today for lunch, I had a really wonderful collard curry sauce over some pasta. It was very delicious. I got an extra third out of my collards because I used the stems as well as the leaves. So many recipes will say, throw away the woody stems. Well, what you do is you chop up those stems, cook those with the onions, so they cook an extra 5 minutes longer than the leaves, but it means you can use them. And the bonus, Carl, is that the stems don't cook down. So you know the tragedy of cooking fresh greens. You start off with a big bag of them and they get a handful of greens.
Right.
Just don't do that. You know, use those stems and you'll get the bulk as well as the extra nutrition and value. So that's two. The other thing, you want to make sure that you have a stoop container. That's stew soup is what I call that. Your listeners could find that on my website at cookforgood.com if they just search for stoop. I've got a detailed recipe. But what I do is put a container, like a Tupperware container or a glass jar that you would can in, so a, you know, one that can stand the thermal shock. Put that in your freezer and start collecting your scraps in there. So when you cook something you have at lunch, I use half an onion, the other half went in my stoop container. You go out to lunch with some friends, you of course you can't eat everything they serve you at the restaurant, so you bring some of that home, put that in your stoop container. All your half a carrot and so forth, as it fills up, you wait till it gets to the top, and then you say, now, tomorrow I can have a free lunch. Thaw it out in the refrigerator overnight, heat it up the next day, taste it. Usually mine tastes like minestrone right out of the gate. I don't have to do anything else to it. Sometimes, depending on what I put in there, I add a can of tomatoes, a little bit of hot sauce, squeeze of lemon juice to brighten it up, maybe some beans if it's a little low on protein. So that's a way that you can literally get a free lunch every couple weeks. That's three. Number four is similar idea, but now with your refrigerator. Start a broth jar. With this, it's another just a glass jar that you would have in your refrigerator. After you get done boiling pasta or, well, actually, start with the boiling pasta. So don't pour your pasta water down the drain. Pour that into the pan that you used to make the tomato sauce, after you've removed the tomato sauce, of course. Swish that around a little bit to pick up whatever's left in the pan. Pour that into the can if you used canned tomatoes. So you get all the tomatoes out of the can. Put that in your jar. If you also were boiling some vegetables, go ahead and put that water in your jar too. And now suddenly you have a beautiful vegetable broth for free. You would have thrown that right down the drain. So that's free broth, which is organic, 11 cents an ounce at the grocery store. If you're cooking with organic food, then your broth is organic too, and that's free. And then number five, my very favorite, and I hope all your listeners adopt this, please cook a pot of beans every week. Beans, beans, beans. Beans cost about $1.70 for a pound of organic beans. That's 10 servings. So for just 17 cents a serving, you can have low-fat, high-fiber, high-vitamin, high-protein food that's organic. And you can, if you use this as the basis of your diet, then you add vegetables, you serve it on rice or quinoa or whatnot, alternate it with other things. You never want it to be boring. Use international recipes of all sorts. Use my recipes. Make up your own recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Use local fresh produce. Cook some, eat some that week, and freeze it so you always have your own fast food.
Mm-hmm.
And now, not only are you saving with every meal that you're eating, but when you're tempted to call out for pizza or go out to eat, which is so expensive, you can just pull some of your frozen beans out of the freezer, and you have your own fast food.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, you have some classes called your 4 weekly Good Cook classes. Can you tell us about these classes and when they'll be available again?
Oh, thank you, Carl. Yes. My 4 Wildly Good Cook classes take you through my book, Wildly Affordable Organic. I just filmed those at Meredith College, which has a very well-known nutrition research group here in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm the first non-faculty member that was allowed to use their food lab. And we've filmed these classes so that you'll be able to order those starting early this fall. And what you learn from these classes first would be how to organize your kitchen. So part of it is, you know, creating that soup container, labeling things, keeping a list of what you have in the freezer, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then we do beautiful beans, of course. We learn all about beans and how to make wonderful recipes and minimize your time as well as maximizing your flavor and value. We do one on vegetables, and then so using seasonal produce, making the most of seasonal produce. And finally, we do cook for good in 20 minutes a day, because in just 20 minutes a day, you can cook 60% of your food from scratch,
mm-hmm.
using, again, pure organic ingredients, very affordable.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't afford to do my whole, if you don't have the time to do my whole program, that's a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, you're also a finalist in the Health Innovation Challenge, and they're looking at projects to help the country with their obesity epidemic. How can cooking the wildly affordable organic way help people lose weight and stay trim?
That's so on target. It really surprised me. When I started this, I was really just looking about thrift. How can you get by on not very much money? And I very quickly found that the way that you save money on food is you eat low in the food chain, you eat with the seasons, and you cook from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
But when you cook from scratch, you're breaking the cycle of hyper-palatable food, which, doesn't that sound scary? That's a term that was developed by Dr. David Kessler in his book, The End of Overeating.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that there's really 3 parts to the food. It's salt, fat, and sugar, that if you put those together, they trigger our lizard brain that says, this is so good, it will help me put on weight for the winter, I need this food. So you tend to eat not just more in that session, but your brain says, I'm going to remember where that is because this is survival food, this makes me so happy, and I'm going to come back here and have more.
Mm-hmm.
So you eat more in that session, it rewires your brain to eat more in a future session. He has some fascinating studies in that book where he shows that people, their body makes them go towards, turn the wheel of the car towards the McDonald's to get back there and get those fries and the burgers and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're cooking from scratch, when you're shopping, not very frequently because you know what's on your list, you go maybe once a week, you spend more time at the farmer's market where there are no ads for salty, sweet snacks, all that junk food, all that highly processed food, you literally train your body to not eat that food anymore. I don't have cravings. I eat nothing but healthy, pure food, and I just don't have those longings anymore. When
mm-hmm.
I wind up trying a bite at a party or something,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't even taste like food anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that by watching portion size, watching the type of foods you eat so you don't trigger your lizard brain, and then getting a little bit of exercise in the kitchen and by walking to the farmer's market,
mm-hmm.
walking around in the farmer's market, that you will be healthier and slim.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm trying to do with the Healthy Initiative grant.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, Linda, will you tell us about your book and your services and products and how the listeners can reach you?
Very good. Well, my book, Wildly Affordable Organic, is available at fine bookstores everywhere and online. It's been in Amazon's top 5 organic cookbooks now for 10 months since it came out last summer. So it's really doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
My website, cookforgood.com, has lots of free recipes, videos, all sorts of other information. You can come there, get free recipes, sign up for my newsletter, and I'll send you a recipe and food news every week.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I do a challenge twice a year. So right now, we're speaking in July, but twice a year I do challenges where people can do my 20-minute-a-day plan for 1 week,
mm-hmm.
get their feet wet, understand the program, learn the basic skills, and then the next week they cook everything from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost done with the first round of that. We're going to start it again next week and do another series, and I'll be doing that again in January. So mm-hmm. I hope your listeners will join me.
Great. Well, I appreciate this, Linda. I do eat organic, and I'll try to follow some of your tips, but I'm not sure I can live on $5 or $6 a day, and I don't have the time. I do everything from scratch, but I don't have a lot of extra time between the radio and my book and things that I'm involved in. But I don't eat processed. I don't eat sugar. I don't eat a lot of fat, and so I eat primarily fruit and vegetables and a little bit of chicken. So, but it's all organic.
That's good.
So I thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. Appreciate it, Carl.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye.